Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the show where we skip the fluff and we get straight into how public speaking builds authority, boosts businesses, and makes your voice the one people actually listen to. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and if you're here to learn from people who are walking the walk and not just talking the talk, you're in the right place. Today's guest is a straight-up force in the real estate world. He's not here flipping houses for pocket change. He's playing the long game, building empires in mobile home parks, parking lots, and every other unsexy asset that turns serious cash flow when everyone else is chasing trends. He's also proof that you can lose everything in a crash and still rise back up with more clarity, resilience, and wisdom than ever before. Kevin Bupp is the founder of Sunrise Capital Investors, host of two top real estate podcasts, and the author of The Cashflow Investor, How to Create Financial Freedom Investing in Commercial Real Estate. He's personally handled over $1 billion in real estate transactions, and he's got zero interest in chasing shiny objects. His specialty? Spotting undervalued opportunities where nobody else is looking and turning them into predictable wealth machines. Through Sunrise, he helps passive investors break free from the grind and build real financial independence. And when he's not scoping out the next smart deal, you'll find him giving back, like his annual 280-mile charity bike ride that's fed thousands of families across Florida. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on how Kevin rebuilt his empire post-2008 and why he's bullish on mobile home parks and parking lots and what public speaking has done to amplify his reach, his brand, and his mission. I can't wait to get into it. So welcome to the spotlight, Kevin.
Kelly, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you, but everybody knows when they watch this show, I love to hear where that journey begins because I want to know how you got to where you are. Before the $1 billion in deals and this best-selling book, what was the spark that pulled you into real estate in the first place?
Yeah, no, it really goes back to a pretty young age. I grew up in a very much middle of the road, blue collar family. Both my parents worked and we weren't poor. We weren't rich. We were somewhere in the middle there and never went without. So I had a good upbringing, but we didn't have a lot of extra either. As a child, there's always things that you want, the latest and greatest sports gear, BMX bike, dirt bike, whatever it might be, whatever the trend was at the age of 9, 10, 11, 12, what have you. And so at an early age, I was always trying to make money. My parents, they did pay my brother and I for doing chores around the house. So this is back when it was okay to let your 9 or 10 year old mow the grass, right? Now it's child abuse. But my brother and I would mow grass. We would walk the dog. We would do chores around the house and we got paid an allowance, but that normally wasn't that much. And part of our chores were shoveling snow in the wintertime, mowing the grass in the summertime. And so ultimately we just took that basic skill set and offered those services to neighbors throughout the neighborhood. And just again, at early age, I realized I could make my own money. If I wanted to buy something, I could go do it on my own. And that really morphed over the years and evolved over the years into just other entrepreneurial, not even entrepreneurial journeys, but just hustling. Hustling one way or another to make cash, to go buy the cool things I wanted. And age 12, got a paper out. Age 14, my father taught me some basic electronics and I learned how to install stereos and cars, amplifiers, and I had an older brother, so he had a lot of friends that were driving at the time, and so I became known as the guy that would install all their speaker systems in their cars. I used my dad's garage to do that on the weekends, and then fast forward to high school, I wasn't very academically driven. No one ever really sat me down and told me why it was relevant what I was learning and how it was going to be applicable as an adult. My parents didn't go to college. My grandparents didn't go to college. So I didn't have necessarily anyone pushing me to say, hey, you got to get good grades so that you can go to a good school. And this is why. And so I just didn't really try that hard. I tried just enough, but really just enough to graduate with really no plan of what I was going to do thereafter. So I just went to community college, started attending bar in the evenings and just got really lucky at some point. I was always trying to find that next hustle And I met a guy by the name of David through a girl I started dating. Literally, he was dating her mother, right? And so it's pretty funny how that all came about. But Dave was a local real estate investor. And so I always joke and say that real estate found me. I didn't find it. But, you know, that's the spark. I met David. David lived he's about 25 years older than I, and he just lived a very different lifestyle, had a different swagger, to a very different type of vehicle than what I was used to my parents growing up. I had a very different type of house. This it seemed to have a lot of flexibility in his lifestyle was really the thing that stuck out to me. I'd see him around my girlfriend's house. She was living with her mother at the time. She was going to school, but I'd see him around like during the weekdays when I thought people of that age were supposed to be working, right? My parents worked 9 to 5. And we just became friends. And after a couple of months of just getting to know each other a little bit, he invited me to a conference. I didn't know too much about what he did other than he owned rental properties that ultimately paid for his lifestyle. He had renters that paid down his mortgage, and there was typically some positive cash flow between what his mortgage was and what they were paying him in rent. And that's basically what his income was. That was his income stream. And so that was intriguing to me. I didn't know any other business owners. My parents didn't have friends that were business owners. So this was like a whole new world to me. And I felt as though it was an opportunity. And so David invited me to a conference in Philadelphia. I very quickly accepted his offer and went away with Dave for 3 days to learn a little bit more about what he did, and got surrounded by a few hundred other people that were at different stages of their journey doing a similar business. And the world opened up to me. Like that was it. Like this I knew was an opportunity. I met other people there that were smart, but I didn't feel they were any smarter than me. They just knew something that I didn't know. And so that was the spark. I was the age of 19.
Your defining moment then.
That was it. It was met with overwhelm. I knew just a little bit from going to this conference. And I knew that if I came back home, I would just fall back into a similar routine and the excitement would fade over weeks if I didn't take action. However, I didn't know what to do to take action other than David was the one guy I knew that had a business. And I knew him long enough that I started identifying areas in his business I felt I could offer a benefit. And one big one was technology. He struggled as a solopreneur with returning emails, even writing emails, preparing minor PowerPoint presentations, just simple things like that, just because of his age. There was a little bit of a gap there with his proficiency with technology. And so I essentially made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And I offered to work for him for free for as long as he'd allow me to. And that's what happened. So I attended bar literally Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. I went to school a couple of days during the week, but I had a lot of free time. And so I went 30 hours, sometimes more than that a week, and I would go work with David. Whatever he needed me to do, I'd go drop off leases, pick up supplies, return phone calls for him, put out signs, call realtors, whatever it was, I did. And in exchange for that, I got to be around him and hear what he said, how he said it, why he said it, who he said it to. And over about 14 months, I learned quite a bit about the business. And that's where it really started. And that's really what kicked things off. And at the age of 20, I bought the first property. And again, that was now 25 years ago. So I've been at this now more than two decades and have a lot of fun doing it.
I think this is fantastic. First of all, the first thing that strikes for me, I love hearing that you had a work ethic, a good solid work ethic early on in life, even though it's not the traditional go to school, get to the college, do all this. The point is you're a hustler and you look for opportunities, which turns out that's your gift. As we get into this story, yeah. I know that's one of your gifts is spotting opportunity. But I also love that you're sharing, besides being a bartender, besides doing the other things you've got to do, that you were the giver first and the receiver second, giving of your time to this guy in exchange for learning all that he does. That's a really good strategy because most people, no matter how high up there are, they love to have free labor. They would love to have someone. Yeah. Who's also in awe of what they do. If you put that combination together, that could lead to some incredible things. So I think that's really a great move. Now, that's what kept you going. That's what kept you interested. Now, how do you move into your own space? Did he help you get started?
Yeah. So again, like I said, I worked for him for over a year and I saved money. I'll save my money from, I actually made really good money at that age attending bar. And so I had some savings and over that year of working with him, I got to meet some of his investors, his money partners, just really got integrated into his network. And obviously I gained a lot of knowledge as well. And while he didn't necessarily help me monetarily, he didn't help me find that first property to buy. He offered guidance. He offered support. I borrowed money from one of his private lenders, which I'd established a relationship with over that year. And so you could say, absolutely, he did help me. Again, wasn't financial support, but just the knowledge and his network was all I needed. And so I, basically use all the $7,000 or so I had saved attending bar, and use that as a down payment at first property, along with a private money loan. And I was off and running. So that was the first property, age of 20, and have since done hundreds of transactions since that period of time. But really, it was that very first property. And I didn't try. The biggest thing was I didn't know what I didn't know. And I always joke and say there's a million and one different ways to make money in real estate. David had one strategy. It was to buy property and hold it and buy it at a discount, buy it at a low basis, buy something that would have positive cash flow once you put a renter in there, and then literally let the renter continue to pay down the mortgage over that 30-year span of time. And at some point in time, you end up with a free and clear home, and hopefully you can buy a home a year, sometimes more than that. And at the end of the rainbow, maybe you've got 30, 40, 50 rental properties that are owned free and clear, and you're making quite a bit of money and living a pretty cool lifestyle. So that's how I originally started. I realized that I had to modify my model a little bit, but I bought that first property. I rented it out. And then I very quickly realized that while David had been doing this for 20, 25 years, he had built up like capital. I mean, he had capital resources. He'd already done cash out refinances. So he was just in a very different capital position than I was. I'd used all my money, and this home I had, it cash flowed about $250 a month. And I very quickly realized it was going to take a long time until I'd be able to save enough money to go buy the next home. And so I modified my plan slightly. And then essentially what would happen is I would end up buying a couple homes. I would flip or wholesale two of them, and then I'd keep one. And I'd buy another couple homes. I'd flip or wholesale two or three of them, and I'd keep one. And I did that for about 2 years before I could actually build up enough cash reserves, build more relationships, capital relationships, to where I could actually start holding the homes longer term like David had.
Question. You went through the terrible 2008 crash.
I did.
Curious, what did that teach you that no mentor or no book ever could?
Yeah, now that's interesting, because I even had later on, leading up to that, I met another mentor that really opened my eyes to a bigger game, really got me thinking big what we do today. And he'd already been through a cycle. He was older than I, and he already been through a few cycles, actually two different cycles. And he even lost everything during that period of time. And it was shocking to me because I was new. And again, still, I guess you could argue and say that I knew a lot, but I was still very new. I hadn't gone through a market cycle, hadn't gone through a downturn. However, I looked at folks around me, including my mentor, his name was Rod, where he had been through a few cycles. I felt as though he was untouchable and a really intelligent individual, but ultimately he lost everything as well. And it was a scary moment as far as what it taught me. Just resilience was a huge one. It also taught me a lot of gratitude, and more gratitude related around just, even though things were bad, even if as bad as they could have possibly got for me financially, I still had my arms, I still had my legs, I still had my health, I still had my family, I still had friends, I still had people that would support me in rebuilding. And it was a tough couple of years. There was some dark moments there, but it really allowed me to embrace my health, embrace just a more positive mindset. And resilience is the key there, because I literally lost all my credit. I got my bank accounts garnished. I literally didn't have any credit cards. They shut off all my credit cards. I had judgments against me out the wazoo, tens of millions of dollars worth of judgments I had to work through, getting served lawsuits every couple of months. I get knocks on the door by process servers. And so it was a challenging time, but I realized that even as bad as I thought it was, there's still millions of other people in this country or this world, country and world, that have it way worse than I. And so really stop complaining, stop bitching, and get out there and get at it again. And that didn't happen overnight. That happened. It took about 3.5 years for me to really not work up the courage, but actually have the excitement to get out there and make another go at it. But yeah, it was a tough time.
Really appreciate you sharing that. I really think it's so valuable for people out there to hear it, especially right now, because we're going through a lot of changes, and there's always the threat of yet another crash. There's always going to be. It doesn't matter how long you've lived. If you haven't been through a crash, you're missing out. Something is going to happen. And I think it's always that I always believe there's a rainbow in everything, in every storm. And it the one thing it does is get you very grateful for the things you still have, for that you really start to put a focus on the things you often take for granted. Like you said, your health, the partner you're with, your children, your whatever. Everybody's got some gifts, and it really makes you pay attention to the things you're able to maintain. And then you find out what you're made of, because these things aren't about you, they reveal you. These things that happen give you an opportunity to be revealed of what you're capable of. So you're obviously that. Let me ask you, you started Sunrise Capital Investors. At what point did you start that?
So I 2008 happened. I started buying real estate again in 2011. Most of it just personal friends and family money. I didn't have any of my own money, and so I had an idea. I found some good opportunities and raised capital from those that still had trust in me, knew that I had a keen eye to identifying good deals. And so I did that from like 2011 to 2014. I did that solo, just buying properties, building back up momentum. And then 2014, I wanted to put more structure around it. I wanted to hire a team. I wanted to build a organization that really could live and breathe on its own, that had a bigger purpose. And so that's when we formally founded Sunrise Capital Investors in 2014. And so we've been at that for a little over a decade now, and have grown from basically myself and one other partner into now we've got, I lose track, but probably about 90 employees across the entirety of the organization, and got some brilliant
Incredible.
talent on board as well, that way smarter than myself, that have helped us grow it to what it is today.
Beautiful. And I now want to get into a topic that I was really excited to talk to you about. And that's that you really put a lot of focus on the mobile home parks and the parking lot market when everybody else is zigging and zagging towards really fancier, flashier assets. Why did you choose those?
Yeah, mobile. Interestingly enough, mobile home parks is what came first. Parking, we did not start buying until about 5 or 6 years ago. But mobile home parks, I bought the first one back in 2012. And funny enough, Kelly, it's these random conversations, putting yourself out there and just keeping your ears open for new opportunities that you didn't know really existed. And so, like, mobile home parks were that for me. Like, prior to that, I'd owned hundreds of single family homes. I'd owned office buildings, retail, shopping centers, self storage facilities, owned assisted living facility. So owned all these various types of commercial real estate that were commonplace, people talked about. There was lots of information out there on it. Owned a number of multifamily apartment complexes. And when I was going to go rebuild and do this the second time around, I went on an exploratory journey just to, number one, find out what the new landscape looked like. Like, what is this world? What's the lending landscape look? What opportunities are out there? And this is back in like 2011, when there's still a lot of distress. Like, there's no recovery happening yet. The real estate market was still fairly flat. Lots of foreclosures still in the marketplace that hadn't yet been absorbed. And so as I was going on this exploratory journey, I had originally thought that the second time around I was going to focus on multifamily property. So that when I look back and reflect on my portfolio before I lost it all, and what really worked and what didn't work, what I really liked and what created the most efficiencies in my business were multifamily apartment complexes. I owned about 300 apartment units, and then I had about 150 single family homes. And single family homes were spread out all over the place in different counties, different markets. Whereas the apartment complexes, I'd have 30 or 60 or 70 units all together, right? It was a lot more efficient to lease them, a lot more efficient as far as having a handyman go do repairs. And so I knew that the second time around, the second time around, I was going to buy multifamily. And so I went and met with a number of folks, and I was introduced to this guy by the name of Randy. Randy had been a commercial banker for many years. He was introduced to me by a good friend of mine. And honestly, the introduction was only made because my good friend thought I would enjoy talking to Randy. He was a wealth of knowledge. He'd been in commercial banking for 30 years. That was it. I didn't know anything else about this guy. I went and had a lunch with him. And what I found out is that he retired from commercial banking. And his retirement was he went and bought two mobile home parks here in Florida. And it was mobile home parks were one asset class I had never considered. I didn't know anybody that owned any of them. Obviously, I live in Florida. There's a lot around here, but it's just it never came to mind. I never had an opportunity to come across my desk of one of these mobile home parks, and I didn't necessarily understand it. However, after the 2 hours of meeting with Randy for lunch, he piqued my interest in many different ways about why I should scrap the idea of multifamily apartment complexes and go buy a mobile home park. And honestly, I was so excited that I wanted to either prove him right or prove him wrong. And so I left that meeting, committed myself to buying a mobile home park. And I did just that. It took me about a year to buy the first one. And I bought that mobile home park, and it went really well. We took a kind of the really run down and rough mobile home park. It was in a good part of town, but just had been neglected for many years. Did what I do best. I identified a good location, a good foundation for the property, a good market it was in, but it just needed capital injection. It needed cleaned up. It needed a better clientele there. And so over a period of about 8 months, we fixed that up, turned it around, and made quite a bit of money on that one. And that's really what attracted me to that asset class. It wasn't, there is a function of being able to provide clean, safe, and affordable housing. I love that piece of the model today. We really focus on our resident base, who they are. We're really offering now what I feel is the best source of affordable housing stock in the country. Housing is out of control now, the cost of it. And I do believe that mobile home parks, it was a little different back then, but today I do firmly believe that mobile home parks truly are the last affordable housing option. There's not really any other stick-built homes that can be purchased anywhere even close in the realm of what you can buy a mobile home for. And so I do think it offers a great opportunity for the first-time home buyer or folks that are working like living wages and they need a clean, safe, and quiet place to live. But it turned out to be a great investment for me the first time around. And that's what, you know, I was like, hey, if I can do this once, let me see if I can do it a second time. So I went and bought the second mobile home park, bought the third, the fourth. And fast forward today, I think we've owned and operated, I think, about 60 communities over the years in parks today in 13 different states. And it's been a fun ride.
Interesting. You describe yourself as a contrarian investor. Obviously, this mindset serves you and gives you hearing you speak about this, clearly this is your competitive edge. But is the goal to buy those and hold them or buy them and sell them?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is a great question. I would say that we mostly have a long-term hold mindset. One of the big reasons, and this is applicable to both mobile home parks and parking, is that they're not making either one of those asset classes anymore. In fact, mobile home parks, it's got a diminishing supply. You find that older mobile home parks, they might be in the path of progress to where now the land's got a higher and better use. So developers come in and they tear them down and they build a shopping center or something like that. And so like that's happening quite a bit. And on top of that, mobile home parks have a bad reputation. I don't know why. It carries back multiple decades, but they're not viewed in the eyes of municipalities as a positive note on a positive note. Although every municipality throughout the country would argue that we need affordable housing stock. That's a big crisis. It's a big problem. This is a solution, but for some reason, they're very opposed to mobile home parks being part of that solution. So very new mobile home communities actually get built on an annual basis. In fact, it's less than 10 every year. And so there's more that gets shut down or redeveloped into something else than new stock that comes online. And so for that reason, and get back to your original question, do we buy and sell or do we buy and hold? Whenever we find a great opportunity in a great market, we know that number one, there won't be another one built down the road. Very slim chance another one will get built. So no competition coming at any point in time in the future. And number two, once we sell that one, it's going to be even inherently more difficult to go find the next one to purchase. We have sold some over the years, but for the most part, what we buy, we like to hold long-term. And parking's the same thing. They're actually, it'd be very difficult. We buy parking garages in very strategic locations, very difficult, both from a cost perspective and also a municipal approval perspective to get a new standalone parking garage built in pretty much every market that we own them in today. So it's one of those things where we can buy it. We can make economic sense of it today. It's a cash flow covered land play. We can literally make money on it, have an irreplaceable piece of real estate that it sits on in an incredibly desirable location within a market and know that no other competition is coming down the road. Like another one's not going to be built around the corner or down the street from where we currently own one. So it's, and that again, that's applicable to both mobile home parks and parking. And so just one of the reasons why we love both those asset classes.
Love this. It's interesting to hear. I'm excited to get to hear about this. And you help so many passive investors. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, who's your ideal investor? And what do they gain if they're working with Sunrise versus they're trying to do it on their own?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can answer maybe the second part of that question first, as far as going out and doing it on your own versus that of investing with a group like ours. It depends on how much free time you have. How are you a person that absolutely needs to be in control? If you got the free time, you got the wherewithal, and you like to be fully in control, then maybe owning your own real estate, like actually out there dealing with tenants, finding the properties, dealing with tenants, lining up the financing, dealing with contractors. There's plenty of folks that do that. Honestly, that's how I started, right? And so there's no right or wrong, but we find that our ideal investor and partner is someone that's a busy professional. They make quite a bit of money. They're a high earner. They've got their skill set, whether it's running a practice, running a business, that's their skill set. They make a lot of money doing it. And they're really trying to buy back their time. They run a business because they're trying to buy back their time. But in that business, they make quite a bit of money. And so they need tax advantages. They need to find homes and diversification for that money that they make. And so we become a perfect solution for them because we essentially do it all. You know, they partner with us. They don't have to worry about finding the opportunities. They don't have to worry about operating the properties. They don't have to worry about tenants, toilets, termites, trash, anything like that. They don't have to get calls in the middle of the night. They don't have to deal with the property management company. They basically have to invest alongside us, follow us for the ride, and get what we call mailbox money sent to them on a quarterly basis. So that's the ideal person for us. And what we have found over the years, it's either the really busy professional that's making a lot of money today, or it's the individual that's already made their money. They've run a business, maybe they sold a business, and they're now it's the stage of their life where they're really seeking wealth preservation. And again, they've made it all. They just don't want to lose it. They don't need to hit home runs, take high risk with their wealth. And they're looking to place it in safe and long-term investments. Additionally, investments that offer tax benefits, and both mobile home parks and parking garages do just that.
Love that. New term today, mailbox money.
Mailbox
money. First time I've heard that, but I want some. I like it a lot. This is really good. So you took all this expertise and you actually sat down, took the time to write a book called The Cashflow Investor, How to Create Financial Freedom Investing in Commercial Real Estate. Question, what made you decide, I got to do this, this is important, and how did it serve you? Because people do things because it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'd always wanted to write a book. I'm not sure exactly what really, where that originated from, but I've been doing my podcast for 12 years now. I talk to a lot of other investors. I read a lot of books myself, and I really enjoy books that have a storyline behind them that actually talk about the individual, their path to success through their trials and tribulations. And my book, basically, it's a culmination of two things. It's my story, my storyline, lessons learned, lessons that I've learned over the last 20 years of being in real estate, how commercial real estate has really offered me the lifestyle, the freedom and flexibility that I've been looking for a long time. But in addition to that, I've interviewed, I don't know how many now, over 1,000 folks, with a lot of them being incredibly intelligent, brilliant commercial real estate investors and developers. And I've always taken a lot of gold nuggets out of those conversations. And so this book is like a culmination of my story, my golden nuggets, paired with all those lessons that I've learned from those many brilliant folks that I've interviewed over the years on my podcast. And so I was compelled to get that out there. I started the podcast for the same reason. Back when I started my show, there wasn't really a commercial real estate podcast that existed. So I started it because I figured if I wanted to, I wanted that type of content. I'm sure there's others out there that wanted that as well. And the book's kind of the same thing. Hey, I've got this information. I've gathered all this intel over the last 20 years. I think if this could just offer a positive benefit to at least one person, then I think that's a compelling reason to write this book. And so there you have it. And we launched it about 2.5 years ago, and it's been a fun ride ever since.
What did you have in mind when you wrote the book? Were you gearing it towards total beginners or seasoned investors or
it's
someone
a little
else?
Bit of both. Because it's a story of my path. My path goes from single family investments through the evolution of commercial real estate to now doing much, much larger deals today. And so it really could be beneficial to that beginner that's just getting started, that maybe has a vision of, I got one rental property, but I'd like to own a lot more of this one rental property. While it's going to benefit my life, it's not going to be a game changer for me, but how do I play a bigger game? Or that individual that's already playing that bigger game, that owns a number of commercial properties, but maybe wants to figure out a way to scale. And how have others done it? How have other folks that I've interviewed or myself, how have we scaled our businesses and grown them to what I like to call a sustainable organization, one that kind of can live and breathe on its own? I do think it's beneficial for anyone along that spectrum.
So helpful. Now you also have a podcast, and your podcast has been successful, and you've been doing this a long time. I wanted to talk to you about your speaking career. And of course, podcasting is absolutely part of that model and a very unique platform. I find it a very intimate platform. You really feel after you've spent 30 minutes, an hour with someone listening to them online, that you have a real feel for who they are and what they do. You started this, I'm sure, to help people, but were you always comfortable public speaking? Was that easy for you?
I don't know if I really did much public speaking before the podcast, aside from maybe going to a meetup group and going in front of the room and telling folks who I was, making an introduction or something like that. But honestly, Kelly, I don't think there was actually a point in time prior to that to where I had done any public speaking, again, outside of a small group of folks. So the podcast really was it. I guess that's really what set the stage. And honestly, that the podcast really has led to other larger public speaking engagements over the years. That's not necessarily my forte. As I'd mentioned before we started recording, I've spoken at many different associations, big industry events, things of that nature, whether it's me being on a panel, moderating a panel, or me doing an actual presentation on a particular topic or subject matter. I'd say that the podcast definitely has helped me quite a bit. I've never been formally trained as a public speaker, but the podcast has definitely helped me a great deal be much more comfortable in front of audiences.
That was my question, is that did you feel that having a podcast and consistent practice and dancing back and forth with someone else really made you more comfortable when you did have to get on stage? Because it doesn't sound like
Absolutely.
that's your first enjoyment is being in front of the crowd, but it does help. Podcasting is a great place to start, whether you're a guest or a host. I think it's a great place to start because it's
I
such an
agree.
intimate platform.
It's
So I
funny,
love that you're doing.
back when I started my show, video wasn't even a thing. It was just audio. I think probably for the first maybe 4 years of Skype was around, but it wasn't a great platform for video at that point. And so really it was just an audio show. And then it's funny because once it evolved to doing video, that opened up a whole new element, right? We could actually see the other person's face, and not that it made a difference, but like now you can see the other person you're speaking with. Sometimes it's maybe more than one individual, but I will say that podcasting has been a it's offered a positive benefit all the way around, both personally and professionally. Back to the reason I started it, I truly started because I was an early adopter of podcasting. I probably started listening to podcasts back in probably 2010 era, something around there. And there weren't many. There weren't a lot of real estate podcasts. There were just a few. And most of the real estate podcasts I would listen to weren't necessarily it wasn't a subject matter that was relevant to me. And so I would listen to them, but I ran through it pretty quickly and I got bored with it and I wasn't getting value anymore. And so for that reason, I figured I'd start my own. And if all that came out of it was that I help a few other people along the way, because there's people out there that probably want to listen to the same type of content that I'm interested in. And then second to that was I get to interview some pretty cool people and ask them, literally have a dedicated hour with them to ask them whatever questions are on my mind. And if that's all that came out of it, then it was going to be a win all the way around. But it's been much bigger than that in the grand scheme of things. It's really helped our business grow. And honestly, my business partner today, Brian Spear, I actually met him through the podcast. I used to do free 30-minute calls every Friday for the first probably 3 or 4 years. And I did that so that I got I opened up my calendar, four 30-minute segments every Friday. And I basically mentioned on the show, and they could go to my website and go to my calendar and schedule a time with me. And I did that so that I could get understand who my audience was. Who were the people that were tuning in? Like because you can't really get... Today, the data is much more relevant and available, but back then you literally didn't know who was tuning in. You didn't know who was listening on the other side. And so through one of those 30-minute calls, I've met a lot of even investors that are investors today on those 30-minute calls, but I met who's now literally the 50% owner of Sunrise Capital Investors, Brian Spear. So met him through one of those phone calls, which is pretty amazing.
You make an excellent point. Seriously. The opportunities that are available from a podcast, it's not just about getting interviewed. It's not limited to that. It's the relationships you create. I have a lot of people apply to be on the show because of the topic, and it really works well for me. What's really great, when I can reach out to someone I want to do business with, and my first offer is a gift to them to come on the show and interview them, so that they get to share what they do, then they're a lot more open to doing business. And it's
That's
not
right.
some cold call where I'm calling to ask for something. No, let me give to you first. And it pays off in spades, especially in just creating wonderful relationships with people that you really end up respecting. And you get to ask the questions. As the host, I love it. I can ask the things that I want to know.
That's
Very
right.
beneficial to me. And then hopefully to the audience, if I do a good job of that. You have helped so many people, thousands of people reimagine their financial future. And I feel like that's really good work. That's really valuable work for being on this planet. But if you were to look back on everything that you've built, what's the accomplishment that you're most proud of and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a good one. I'd say the team is everything. We work really hard to not just find bodies, but find the right talent, the folks that have the correct alignment within the organization with our core values. And we won't, even if you've per the resume, if you've got the skill sets, that doesn't mean that you're getting hired by Sunrise. And so my partner and I have worked very diligently over the last 10 years to bring the right people on the bus and get the wrong ones off. And I'm incredibly proud of the team that we've built, but also the stickiness of the team. And we've got folks that have worked for our organization literally since day one that are still there. And that's not very common nowadays. You
that
just don't
says
see
everything.
That. You've got folks that are jumping around quite often, sometimes every couple months, definitely every couple of years. And so we've got a lot of really long tenured folks that have been with our organizations on a multitude of levels, all the way to down the community managers that run our mobile home community on a managerial level, all the way up to a controller that's on our finance department that have worked for us for many years. So just, I'm very proud of the team. It is now a company that if I go away for a couple of weeks and spend time with my family, that I know that it's going to be in better health when I come back. The company will be better health when I come back. And so we've just got some brilliant folks there that, again, have a true alignment of interest and passion and are fully subscribed to our core values. I love that.
Boy, nothing says success like that. I love your perspective. I love your work ethic and your point of view. Tell me, last question, what's lighting you up right now? What are you genuinely excited about? If it's in your business growth or your personal growth, what are you most excited about?
Yeah, I'll tell you that there's a dream I've had for the last probably 15 years, and it's to go take a year, not off, but go take a year and travel the country or the world by boat. And I always thought it was going to happen, but I thought it would happen when my boys are off to school. They're 8 and 11 now, so they've got quite a number of years before they get to that point. I've been manifesting this for a number of years. I've talked to my wife about it. And again, she knows my passion for it, my interest, and we're a water family. We spend pretty much all of our free time outside of sports and family events on the water, whether it's the ocean or lakes, and that's our thing. But we have just committed, in the last couple of months, we've committed and we're putting the wheels in motion. So next March, we're going to depart and do what is known as the Great American Loop, which is about a 6,500-mile nautical journey up through the river system, the Great Lakes, up through the Canada, and then back down the river system, down the Gulf of Mexico and around Florida. And we're going to live on a boat for a year and go do that. The kids are going to homeschool, and I'm going to run the business remotely. And I'm super excited about it. I'm scared at the same time, but I'm super pumped. And it's something that's been top of mind. And I'm just happy that we're in a position in our lives that we can actually go do that. I've got a great team in place. I've got a wonderful wife, wonderful boys that are on board for the journey and fully into it. And I'm pumped about it.
Great adventure planned. And honestly, with all the hard work you've been doing all these years, it's really warranted to take some time off with your family, especially what age your boys are at. That's really exciting. That's I just want to thank you really for jumping in the trenches with us today and sharing what it really takes to build wealth that lasts. I'm so glad we had this conversation today.
No, it's been great, Kelly. You're a wonderful show, wonderful interviewer, and great questions. And no, this has been a phenomenal conversation. So thank you for the opportunity.
It's been a joy. And you're just this rare combo of kind of no BS clarity and next level insight. I love it. You are very much an opportunist. You're able to see things that other people don't see. And I feel like our listeners are really going to walk away sharper and hopefully a little bit more curious than they were an hour ago. I hope this is the first of many conversations. There's so many takeaways I got from this, but one of them was don't follow the crowd. Look where others aren't. Your success in mobile home parks and parking lots really prove that fortune really does favor the bold and the contrarian. That is a really good name for you. And again, thank you for sharing about public speaking. It isn't just about being heard. It's about being trusted. And from podcasting to presenting to investors, you're a great illustration. You did a beautiful job of showing there are different ways for you to get the word out there. You don't have to get up and speak on a big stage with a huge crowd. You might be invited to do it. You can choose, but a podcast is a beautiful way to connect personally with people and create an impression and give people an opportunity to find out what you know and who you are and how you feel and if you're a good fit. I applaud you. 12 years as a podcaster, yay you, because that's a lot of work. I'm here to say it's a lot of work and a lot of commitment. That's stellar. Do you know most people don't make it to 20? They quit.
That was my original goal was to stick with it for a year and see what happened after that. So
I said that too. I'm now in year two. So I give us all credit for
congrats.
It's not easy and it takes work and commitment. So I love that. For everybody out there, if you want to learn more about Kevin, check out his website. Pretty simple, kevinbupp.com. And while you're at it, grab a copy of his book, The Cashflow Investor, How to Create Financial Freedom Investing in Commercial Real Estate. You can get it on Amazon. It's really packed with a lot of strategic insight that could shave years off your learning curve. But Kevin has also offered an opportunity to get this book for free. So you can go to kevinbupp.com/free book. I think we can even remember that. Go get this book. This is a man that just is willing to give so much insight that is so powerful for you to get ahead of the game. Because real estate, I love real estate a lot more than other things. And I love it that this is your expertise. But you work with something we talk about on this show a lot. Public speaking isn't just about performance. It's a power tool for whether it's expanding your reach or building credibility and for creating real impact in your business. Obviously, Sunrise Capital Investors is on the map, not just for all the work that it does, but the word that it gets out. When you know how to communicate with purpose, you stop pitching and you start attracting. I even heard Kevin say manifesting. I think that's a trick, people. I'm telling you, I think that's one of his part of his secret sauce. So he gets it. Thank you again, Kevin, for being here. I'm definitely keeping an eye on everything coming up with Sunrise Capital Investors.
Thank you, Kelly. It's been a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please let us know. It helps us if you like or you share, you subscribe. It really, that kind of support seriously helps us grow the show and reach more people. And people need to hear from people like Kevin. You wouldn't have known about him if you hadn't found him on this show. For someone interested in real estate, you want to forward this episode. It gives pretty much what I call an unfair advantage to get to hear from an expert like this. I love hearing your takeaways or any aha moments. So let me know. We're here to show you when you learn how to share your message out loud with confidence and clarity, the whole game changes for your business, your impact, and your future. So thanks everybody for being here. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. See you next time. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know, and I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.